So a key component is really to expand and make this technology available. And we have over 40 different new AI projects, for instance, that will improve diagnostic care underway, probably more than any group, I think, worldwide. It's actually going to bring it to a practical use.
Welcome to the Disruptive Innovators, Champions of Digital Business podcast, where IT and digital leaders from around the world talk about their careers, their inspiration, and their vision for the future of digital business. I'm your host, David Wright. The world of digital business is evolving faster than ever, and I want this to be a place where digital business champions create a village to band together and help each other navigate the ever-changing terrain. Disruptive Innovators features conversations with CIOs and digital leaders from around the world, diving into their personal backstory, career, their current role, trends they've been seeing, and their vision for the future, personally, professionally, and otherwise. This podcast is made for people who are seeing how quickly the digital business landscape is evolving, those who recognize that it takes a village of trusted advisors to navigate this ever-changing terrain, people who enjoy listening to high-level discussions surrounding what it means to be a leader, real-world examples of challenges faced, and industry-specific strategies leveraged to create exceptional business outcomes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.
Good afternoon, innovators. David Wright here, and I am your host of the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast, live from Atlanta, as it happens, our first show on the road, if you will. And I am honored to be joined by Dr. John Simon. Dr. Simon, it's a pleasure to have you on.
No, David, I appreciate the opportunity as well and look forward to the discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. For those of our listeners who might not be familiar, Dr. Simon, with your work, can you tell everyone a little bit about your current role?
Sure. I'm founder and CEO of SimonMed Imaging, and we're one of the largest outpatient imaging providers in the United States. We focus on all areas of diagnostic imaging. So that includes MRI, CT, mammography, ultrasound, PET CT, really all the areas.
Yeah, obviously super well known. Again, Dr. Simon, we like to just start the episode with one piece of actionable advice you might look to leave the listeners with today.
That's a great question. It's a broad question. I will turn it around and say, always ask and make sure you understand. So if you're undergoing a treatment, let's say for a condition or have a diagnosis, I would do your own research and ask questions. Because there's such rapid change in both the way we diagnose conditions and also in the way we treat that you really need to be your own advocate as well. You certainly need to trust your providers, but you also need to be your own advocate.
Love that. And that's great advice in healthcare and beyond. I feel like so often people don't have the courage to just step up and ask that next question.
Yeah, and I just have a lot of experience over the past 30 years in terms of diagnostics, but also guiding friends and colleagues through different processes. And it's often, there's more options than people initially think. And what's great now is there's accessibility with the internet that you can certainly be led astray. So you have to be careful, but there are clearly recognized sources of information, and optionality is important.
I would concur wholeheartedly. Let's dive in first to that 30 years you just mentioned. How did you start out and how did you get to the point that you're at in your career today?
Oh, sure. I've always been interested in science. So just a nerd in terms of that. And as I went through medical school, radiology really appealed to me because it was changing rapidly. It was tied to technology, a lot of science. And it covered a broad area in medicine, so I wouldn't be limited to one area. And so that's why I went into radiology. I also liked interacting with patients a lot. So I started my career as an interventional radiologist, actually doing procedures as well as imaging. Over time, that changed really to focusing more on outpatient imaging because there's just such rapid change. the advent of CT, rapid CT, MRI in particular, really opened up all new areas for diagnosis and some areas for new treatments as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. That's super cool. When did you start SimonMed?
I started it over 20 years ago. So prior to that time, for about 15 years, I had a traditional pathway of reading studies in a hospital environment and also doing procedures. But I always had that curiosity. And when I founded the outpatient practice, that was really at a crossroads in terms of new technology with CT and with MR. And the change really happened not only in the ability to see things better with CT and MRI, but also in computerization and speed. So if you look over 20 years ago, an average CAT scan may have taken 45 minutes. And you really were limited in resolution to maybe about 5 millimeters. But there was a rapid change with computerization and better computing power. So that changed to be able to do CAT scans within minutes and to see resolution of less than a millimeter. So you could visualize even the coronary arteries. So it opened up a whole new area. And so things we take for granted today in terms of going in, let's say, and having a CAT scan, getting an accurate diagnosis within minutes, that wasn't possible 20 years ago. It's a much more drawn out process. And the same with MRI. MRI started out as a procedure that would take over an hour in a very narrow magnet, very uncomfortable. But over time, the speed has grown. The speed of completing the exams has improved. So we can do exams in minutes now, and we can see a lot more. And in addition, it's a lot more comfortable with the wider scanners as well.
Yeah, no. And it's really, I think that you embody the guests we look to have on the show, an interventionist, a doctor, a radiologist, an entrepreneur. And along over the course of your journey, I like to ask, what was one of the most important things you learned personally, professionally, or otherwise? And if you can think about life before learning it and after learning it, maybe it came from a point of hardship. Maybe it came out of something really good. But is there a time, something that sticks out in your mind in that vein?
I mean, I think there's a lot of good stories from that question. So it's a great question. I think you have to have perseverance when you start a new business or you start a new practice, because not everything is going to work the way you want it to work. So that's just essential. In terms of kind of crossroads, it took some time for me to understand how long it would take and how important it would be to educate patients and referring doctors about new technology. So I was very excited with the first office I opened. We had some of the first technology of its kind in an outpatient setting in the U.S. But it took over a year for me to educate even the referring doctors of what's possible. And not only was a lack of education, but it was a good business lesson to learn that there are folks that benefit from keeping things unchanged. And so you may try to be, being an innovator is a great thing. It's very rewarding, but you also have to understand that there will be folks threatened by innovation and will push back.
Yeah, that's a great lesson. And it reminds me of the almost requirement or the need for a grassroots approach when it comes to innovation. In my experience, actually going out and enrolling people in what's possible, which it sounds like what is some of what you had to do with the referring physicians, it's arduous. It takes a lot of time. But in my experience, if you can go and solicit the champions in the field, it makes your life, it's that much easier when it comes to rolling out. If I roll out a new technology, the success of it is going to be measured by people consuming it, right? And actually using it.
Right. No, I think that's a very good point. And when I first started, I actually reviewed the results with every patient. We started with kind of very specialized CT and MRI, but I would actually meet with every patient. That became unsustainable after a while, but I made sure that they understood what we could do, and that feedback went to the referring doctors. And then I went back to key providers or practitioners and brought them up to speed. So it did, over time, reach out to folks, but you're right. You have to be your own advocate and explain things to folks as well.
So it's been 20 years. Talk to me a little bit about your vision for SimonMed now. I know you've partnered with some great folks from a financial standpoint, from a technology standpoint. What's your vision for the future as it stands? And maybe what are some of the key initiatives you guys are focused on?
I truly believe that there's room for us to grow nationwide with our model because we're focused on key things. One is having the latest technology. So we operate on a common platform nationally, and that's very different than most of healthcare, which is very regional. And so we can adopt, we can test, verify, and adopt a product that will improve diagnostic care, and it's instantaneous once it's adopted. So we can adopt very rapidly new technology. So for instance, in cardiovascular imaging, we're one of the largest outpatient providers providing the newest technology, FDA approved, to analyze the coronary arteries. It's one of the biggest providers evaluating the brain for dementia, things like that. We can do it on an outpatient basis. So I see us growing because we're able to make this new technology accessible to patients and referring providers. And we even have doctors that are employed by hospitals send to us. So even though a lot of the employed physicians are steered towards their in-house networks, we often have technology that the hospitals don't have yet. So they'll send to us. So a key component is really to expand and make this technology available. And we have over 40 different new AI projects, for instance, that will improve diagnostic care underway. Probably more than any group, I think, worldwide, that's actually going to bring it at practical use. But in addition to that, the other part of it is affordability. And we've been very consistent on that. I would say on average, we charge about a tenth to a fifth the price of a hospital-based imaging practice. In Northern California, for instance, an MRI may be $400 to $500. We'll have the latest technology, latest equipment, specialized radiologist, and a hospital provider in that market will charge $4,000 to $5,000. Not exaggerating. Other markets, the hospitals may charge $2,000 to $3,000 for an MRI, but that's a constant issue, is to be able to educate patients that they don't have to pay $1,200 for a CAT scan. I remember one of my family members, different market, very modest, very quiet, had a CAT scan. We didn't have a CT in that market, but she ended up doing a payment plan for $1,200 for a CAT scan. And I said, you could have flown out. We would have taken care of you. We would have done it for free, family member, but normally we charge about $200, $250 for a CAT scan. And I said, you don't have to do something like that. But we still see across the markets that we're in that patients are paying, I believe, much too much for the imaging. And the impact is in two different ways. One is that patients end up not getting the studies they need. And that happens every day because they just can't afford it. They have a high deductible. And that's the biggest one. The other is they're burdened with too much expense. They don't have to spend that much. Now, it's important to understand now about half of the patients that we see are covered by government programs. So they have help. But the important thing also is there's another half that have a deductible $3,000 or more, and they're paying for their care. And this is just one step usually towards the diagnosis. And if they can't afford it, then they don't make that whole process or whole step. Also, it's important, we did a recent review. We do this about every year, of how many patients come back for the follow-up imaging they need. And there's still a lot of patients that just cannot afford to come back. It's a significant problem. So we're very cognizant that we want to bring great technology, but we want to make sure that technology is effective and helps people. And then we want to make sure that we can offer it in an affordable way or as affordable as possible.
Yeah. I'm going to be presenting at the Enterprise IT Leadership Summit, Gene Kim's event in Las Vegas, about an RCA we did for a health system in regard to the latency of image transfer. And the reason is because Gene had a personal experience with his father going into an acute care setting for a CT scan and MRI. And when he got to the neurology ward, they couldn't bring up the images. And they needed to figure out whether to put him on blood thinners or not. And the doctors didn't know because they couldn't see the images. And it was just, it's scary. And at the same time, I'm hopeful when I hear about what you guys are doing. And I'm really excited that we're talking about it on this podcast as a platform to, like you said before, just educate patients about what's out there. Cause I think it is so confusing and so ambiguous sometimes, and people often get overwhelmed and there's so much misinformation. So I think this is just really exciting to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's difficult to navigate because it's such rapid change and also just incomplete or incorrect information. It's interesting in terms of the hospital environment, there is an AI tool, artificial intelligence tool, which is just common sense. It makes sense. That tool will give a preliminary interpretation, let's say for a brain CT looking for a bleed, but it'll move it to the top of a list. So if you take a busy hospital where there's imaging coming in, and we use the same technology for outpatient, but typically our patients are not as acutely ill. But what it does is it prioritizes. So when I talked about AI before, I was talking about being able to see things better or more accurately. Let's say the plaque in the coronary arteries or white matter tracts in the brain. But you can also use this technology just to improve care in other ways. You can move scans that look abnormal to the top of a list to bring it to someone's attention. And so you get speed to care, or speed to diagnosis occurs more rapidly. So that's another area that we think some of the new technology will just improve overall care.
Yeah, I know, because it had been a while. We were catching up before the episode and you're talking about that conference you were at too as well. It sounds like there's a ton of innovation happening that you guys are at the forefront of.
Yeah, what we're seeing is diagnostic imaging is becoming fundamental to treatment decisions in most areas of medicine now. And we're seeing just a lot of research dollars, but a lot of technology coming into it. So when I started the practice over 20 years ago, it was really basic computerization that we all can understand, from a big old type computer to a small streamlined computer that's much faster. That just improved the technology and how the equipment worked 20 years ago. So it gave us the ability to see things, basic things better. What we're seeing now is really a revolution with the AI. So we're taking the basics of what we have and just exponentially increasing the ability to see new things or do things more quickly. So really almost every area in medicine we touch with diagnostic imaging, and we're involved in the innovations that are occurring in those areas. And I could go across the board and you would see just amazing things that are occurring.
You think there's, so I may get involved with an AI center of excellence in Ohio, because we do a lot of work in Ohio. And one of the use cases they want to try to work on is parent infant mental health and infant mortality rates for diverse populations. And I appreciate kind of how we'll be able to start using diagnostic imaging in more specialties and things of that nature. Have you heard anything about that world? It impacts my mom's nonprofit too in New Jersey. So it's just something that I'm curious about personally.
I'm not sure exactly correlating to that. I can tell you in the field of kind of psychology and psychiatry, areas of depression, anxiety, just very common areas across the world, there's a need for more accurate diagnostics or earlier diagnostics to understand if, let's say, medication, for example. Won't talk about psychotherapy. That's a different example. But let's say medication. Is this an effective medication? And the typical model, unfortunately, is wait, trial and error. And then you may end up with two medications, and then it's even more complicated to figure out, or more than that. But there's evidence now that some of the techniques we've been able to do for 20 years, when you superimpose AI, you can see things that you could not see before. So there's an area in imaging where we can look at brain activity non-invasively in the MRI scanner. It's called functional MRI. It's been around again for over 20 years. We actually use it in certain areas for brain trauma, looking to show objectively areas. But there's new techniques with AI which are making it more sensitive and specific. And there's some early articles on that just in the last 6 months showing how functional MRI can be used to show changes in brain connections related to treatment. So the idea is that you could start someone, do a baseline study. Let's say someone has depression. There seem to be certain characteristics in the baseline functional MRI in the way the brain is connected that is different. I'm not saying good or bad, but it's different. It seems to correlate with depression. And the idea is once you can map that, you start treatment and you do a follow-up study to see if the medication is redirecting those connections into what would be considered a more normal pattern. So the idea is you'd correlate that with improvement clinically. But it's just, if you think about, let's say we used oncology before, for most cancers, you need to image to see if you're making an impact. So if for treatment of, let's say, anxiety, depression, if you had an objective way to do that early on with imaging, that could just help so many people.
Well, and let me ask you, because you brought up brain injury, which is also something that I've had the opportunity to participate at the National Academy of Science, Engineering and Medicine in DC. They did a TBI forum, like for follow-up care on TBIs, because currently a lot of folks will get treated in an acute care setting for a TBI and they'll be treated successfully, if you will, and there won't be really much of a aftercare plan or follow-up care plan per se, because their symptoms, their immediate symptoms have been cured, if you will. I'm wondering if these advancements in the functional MRI can maybe detect certain things in the brain that could lead to depression and headaches and a lot of those symptoms that for TBI patients often don't have been 3 to 6 to 9 months after that initial acute incident. Yeah, yes. I'm wondering if that's happening right now.
Yeah, I can't say for sure it's happening, but how we would do it is become apparent. So that would be a great use case, is to be able to see something in advance, right? And that's in traumatic brain injury, patients will often have symptoms and the standard MRI may appear normal. We know from, for instance, the NFL, that you can have significant changes without seeing it on just a routine MRI. But we do much more than just a routine MRI now. And that's important for patients to understand. We can map out the brain connections, the white matter connections in the brain, but we can also look at functional activity based on oxygenation. And there is evidence, clear evidence, that functional MRI can be helpful in traumatic brain injury. If we can show it's more easily done, so more centers can do it, then it'll be more widely adopted. But your idea is a great idea. And there's just so much need. And that's an example where if you had a better tool early on, you could help so many people.
Wow. Well, I appreciate that you guys are stalwarts of this, that you're on the forefront of all this. And honestly, after this, I'm excited to see what I can do to shout it from the rooftop. What about CEO, founder of Simon Med, you're there leading the charge. What about challenges that you've faced as a business, either during COVID, leading out of COVID, today? What are some of the biggest challenges you guys face as a business?
So during COVID, it was a matter of just being able to operate and survive. So for outpatient imaging, demands on us in some ways increased because patients weren't able to go to the hospital typically. In other ways, they decreased because all the elective surgeries and things went away. But we had to just find models to keep operating and protect our staff and protect patients. We're fortunate that the whole community was understanding of the new procedures we had to adopt for masks and gowns and all of that. But that was a big challenge just to get through that. The day-to-day challenges we have to deal with the U.S. healthcare system and insurance companies. And we have so much inefficiency related to that. We go through processes where examinations have to be approved in advance, and the payer can come back and not pay for it after the fact. We deal with that every day, and the patients don't understand how you can have something, it'll get approved, and then the payer will say, we don't want to approve it. It's a game that we have to deal with every day. And it's a significant distraction in terms of resources. It's just very unfortunate. We see standards also set by insurance plans. They're the arbitrators for many patients of what they can get or not get. That doesn't always relate to what the current standard is in terms of treatment. So we'll have advances where we can see things and the payer may not pay for it. They just don't want to.
Or it sounds like even like this, what the standards should be, because like they may not even be meeting the baseline standards. And here we are, those standards were set 20 years ago and we could really be here.
Hopefully they're, we haven't seen them be that far behind, but the bureaucracy and a slowness. And if you're a patient with an acute illness, you want the best treatments possible. And just so you can imagine, I think all of us can imagine the rapid change we're seeing around this. And then you can imagine a bureaucracy that is deciding if you can get that care or not. So it's interesting, but that's an important struggle every day to make sure that patients who have insurance get their care covered and can get their care. And it's a significant struggle. And it's a significant struggle for referring providers. They spend time on the phone to get an approval. Someone has chest pain, they're worried about a blood clot to the lung. They're on the phone with an insurance plan to get approval for something that's just obvious. So that's one area. Another area is just cost. Cost of living for everyone has gone up. And what's it, I don't think probably patients understand as much or see it, is that we don't get to charge more. The health plans typically have given us minimal rate increases over the past few years. That's including the years of COVID with the extra supplies. And so it's a struggle to try to get paid enough to cover all your costs and pay your staff well. We focus on technology. We focus on having great radiologists and trained staff, but we have to constantly focus on efficiency.
Yeah,
it would patients, but yeah.
Yeah, it's clear that you guys are focused on patients, patient advocacy, and that just rings true throughout everything that you've said, but you are still a business, right? So that makes sense, especially if you're charging fairly to patients. I imagine like you, that just increases the need for efficiency when you're not charging $5,000 a study, right?
Right. And again, it's a constant focus, but it's fun overall to be in radiology right now. You get to help patients. You have a lot of new ways to help. We also have fun, our radiologists, our physicians working with not only our staff, but also referring providers, because we can see that we're adding value.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting. We talked about some of the trends that you're seeing, but as a whole, with an understanding that you don't have a crystal ball, but or a magic wand, where do you see the radiology industry going in the future, and or what do you hope will be some of the biggest changes as time passes?
I think it's going to go towards more objective or quantified results. So when you get, let's say, an MRI for brain trauma, it's not going to be a qualitative report. This looks a little different or that looks different. It will be a precise, accurate comparison or analysis that's actionable. Just as you mentioned on the medication, wouldn't it be great if you could do a functional MRI and said, drug A doesn't work, drug B is working, and with an 80% certainty. So I think there's going to be an added quantification, or maybe an easier way to think about it, precision in the information we get. And what that'll lead to is more accurate diagnoses, but it'll also mean that radiology is even more fundamental in terms of the treatment plans for patients. I also think that radiology will really help spearhead the expansion of preventive medicine. And we see that. We have over 20 years of imaging with whole body imaging, MRI. I know it seems to be rediscovered in the last couple of years with some startup companies, but we actually have one of the largest data sets in the world. We've been doing it for 20 years. And the idea behind it was, when I first started, we put a cardiac MRI in, which is very fast. You could image everything, but it had speed. And we could actually do a screen of the whole body looking for tumors. And a patient could tolerate it, barely. It was about an hour exam. But at the time, that was a revolution that we could cover so many different areas. So we've refined that. It's down to about 12 to 15 minutes. And we've added about 10 times as much in terms of acquiring data. But we can do a whole body screen that sees so many things in terms of early diagnosis. And I just see the utility of that, or usefulness of that, is going to increase with time. Now, it's interesting, as our ability to see things early has improved, there's just as much pushback from another side saying it's going to be too costly. So it's interesting that you really have to be your own advocate. I keep using that word, but it's so essential because you don't want your healthcare based on a percentage. This helped 50% of patients. If you're in that 50%, you want that. And that may not have been the best example, but.
No, I get it. And it's just sad that we're not getting there quicker, because it sounds like there's things we can be doing with more immediacy to start treating our communities in a preventative way, or promoting more preventative care versus what I have to imagine is more costly care after the fact, right? So it's just, I hope that the data will ultimately support this effort. And I do, like, with where we're going in strides towards more value-based care and things of that nature, I am optimistic, but I guess cautiously optimistic.
I think what I've seen with the value-based care is if there's retention of the patient within that environment long-term, then there's a strong incentive to do all these things for prevention. Because you don't want to treat a cancer later on when you could do a minor surgery perhaps early on and cure.
Right. Or treatment.
But if the value-based care is in an environment where the patients are changing health plans every year or every 2 years, which occurs, then you can see the value-based care being turned into a different direction to kind of reduce costs if that patient's going to be out of that environment. Mm-hmm. I think when you say value-based care, and from my opinion, is you have to look at how long that patient is going to stay under that umbrella with that organization.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. And I appreciate you educating me on your insight, because I feel like some of the organizations that are doing it well are exactly that. They're more that membership-based type of organization, like ChenMed, I think, is one of them, or stuff, things like that.
Right. And if you have that whole environment, then you really can make rapid advances. And that's exciting.
This has been great, Dr. Simon. I've learned so much. I know our listeners will have gotten a ton out of this. One of the last questions we just like to ask our guests is always, if you could go back 10, 15, 20 years in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Not to be afraid to start out and do what you think you can do, and is a good thing to do. Not be so timid about it. I've matured over time. It's not easy. I know there's a lot of unknown obstacles, but don't be afraid to chase your dream, so to speak.
Love that. And clearly you have. Inspiring to me. I want to be like you when I grow up. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Dr. Simon, thank you so much for participating today.
No, David, thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll catch you all next week.
Thank you for listening to the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future episodes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.